Put those search lights up on the tower. Right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Good morning. Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Every week we shine the spotlight on a different member of our community. And this morning we have Jim Mudd. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Herb.
Thanks for coming in and being part of Community Spotlight. I'll start by asking you, are you a local?
Well, I consider myself a local, but I was born at Epping in Sydney. And for the first 6 years of my life, I lived at Beecroft and then West Pennant Hills on small farms. Moved to Foster in 1960, where my family ran a small business. Then moved to Taree because my father was not enjoying good health. And I moved to Taree and grew up there, really. He died when I was 12, and Mum had five kids at school to put through.
So that must have been pretty tough, five kids back in the 60s?
Yeah, it was a tough life. We had a lot of love from my mother, but we were financially disadvantaged and we had no phone, no car. And I had my first job from the age of eight. I worked 5 days a week after school and on Saturday mornings. And I held that job from eight years of age till about 16. Paid $3 a week when I was eight and still paid $3 a week when I was 16. No such thing as CPI.
And when was your first experience with Armidale?
My first experience was 1974. I was a student at the Newcastle Uni working at the BHP Steelworks at Christmas holidays, and my mate and I decided to have a look at the coast, drive up into Queensland. The floods were on in Brisbane, and the mate said, let's go back home. The roads were blocked and so on. I said, no, let's strike inland and have a look at Armidale. I turned down a scholarship to go to Armidale and university, New England University, and chose Newcastle because of its proximity to Taree. And so I came inland and I just took one look at Armidale and fell in love with the place.
What did you think it was about Armidale that made you fall in love with it?
The beauty of the countryside around about, but also the beauty of the town, historic architecture. The university campus was beautiful, the lush greenness of the place, peaceful and so on, and I just fell in love with it.
So you were a teacher from BA at Newcastle Uni. You went to Coonamble, I think.
Yes, I did a BA Dip Ed at Newcastle Uni, and then my first school was Coonamble High School, and I didn't know where it was. I drove out to Coonamble and I spent 3 years there and never regretted it. It was a wonderful experience. But at the end of my 3 years, I sought to come to Armidale, and I was lucky to get Yooralla Central. So I came here on the 3rd of January 1980, lived out of Armidale but taught in Yooralla for 3 years and 1 month before being transferred to Javal High School, where I taught for 2 years. And then a lectureship came up at the Armidale College of Advanced Education. I had been studying it through UNE when I was at Coonamble and got a Bachelor of Letters, which was later upgraded to a Master of Letters, and I wanted to do further study.
So you did that for about 5 years, and that's around 1980, and then you went to Pennsylvania. Why did you go overseas?
I wanted some international experience. There was a professor here from Lockhaven University teaching at UNE, Professor Tom Farley, who encouraged me to go, and I went over and taught American National Government and Law and Society. It was a wonderful experience. I'd never been outside Australia, and to go and work in a university and have a look at America and teach American politics. When in doubt, people used to say to me, Americans would never wear compulsory voting, and when I put it to the students over there, they thought it was a good idea.
So you're teaching politics to Americans?
Yes.
So you went from there to Calgary in Canada. Why Canada?
I'd applied to a number of universities and I'd sat what they call the GRE exam to get entry to a PhD program, both in America and Canada, and the best offer I got, and it came highly recommended, was the University of Calgary. And I was very fortunate to go there and study under Professor Roger Gibbons, who unfortunately passed away in April last year, an outstanding scholar, probably the best I've ever encountered. And I'm so grateful that I had Roger as my PhD supervisor.
What do you remember about the winters in Calgary?
People complain about cold winters in Armidale, have no idea, and I say to them, this is a Canadian heat wave. I had 3 weeks of minus 40 Celsius over there in Calgary. Nothing warmer through the day than minus 30. And yet Canadians keep going to work. They're a hardy lot. When I was in the US, if school couldn't be held, they'd just add another day to the school term and they'd catch up, you know, and before they went on holidays. But in Canada, they just keep going. And it's minus 40. That's not wind chill. That's just genuine minus 40.
So we've got no idea what minus 40 is like. No idea whatsoever. No. So your final thesis, your PhD in Calgary, what was that?
I wrote on regional health authorities and federalism, Australia and Canada. And in that, I compared the health systems in Canada with Australia, then the province of Alberta, comparing that with New South Wales, and then narrowed it down to look at area health services or regional health authorities. And I compared the New England Area Health Service, as it was, and I was the foundation chairman of the New England Area Health Service, with the Chinook Regional Health Authority based on Lethbridge.
So that takes us back then. Let's go back a step. In 83, you were on the board of the Armidale Hospital till about 96, chairman of the board of the hospital.
I was appointed to the Armidale Hospital board in 1983 and then quickly became chairman of the board. And so that was a wonderful experience. And then I came back from overseas and Andrew Refshorgi, the then Deputy Premier and Minister for Health, Aboriginal Affairs and others, portfolios, contacted me and asked me would I chair a New England Area Health Service. And the government overnight abolished the boards of 23 hospitals, three district boards, and amalgamated them all into the New England Area Health Service.
But surely the regional delivery of hospital and healthcare is better done at the regional basis, not amalgamated from a centralised place like Newcastle, surely.
Oh, look, I totally agree. I chaired a hospital board based on just Armidale. Later on, Guyra Hospital was added to that board's responsibility. But then I had the opportunity to chair the Area Health Service, the New England Area Health Service, and it had 23 hospitals and 28 community health centres scattered across the New England Northwest. When I finished up, the government decided to amalgamate with Hunter and form the Hunter New England Health Service, and I was one of its major critics. I went to Tamworth and spoke at a rally with Tony Windsor, the local member, and also Jenny Gardner, MLC, from the National Party, and the three of us sang from the same hymn sheet. We were totally opposed to the amalgamation and aired a number of problems that we could see, and a lot of that's come to fruition. So I'm still vehemently opposed to the amalgamation with Hunter. Doesn't mean to say we can't access John Hunter Hospital. And of course, the boards are gone now. And that's, you know, I find that terrible because community has been removed from decision making. In my day, we rotated the board meetings around the communities. So 1 week it might be in Tenterfield, the next one might be in Moree, the third one might be even Little Prima down in the southern parts. And people would come. We'd have a public meeting beforehand. I'd give a bit of an outline of what's happening, and then people could have an input and tell us what they thought their problems were.
So is that the main issue, is that there's no community input in health service decision making?
It's certainly a major issue. There are a range of things. Health is a very complex area, but I think taking away boards, taking away community involvement in decision making is the wrong move.
Okay, so you took up a lectureship at UNE around early 90s. What did you lecture?
At UNE, I lectured in Australian politics. I was the coordinator of the big first-year group. I also developed a course that I'd inherited from Professor John Warhurst on comparative federalism, and it involved comparing Australia with Canada. And I was the ideal person to teach that. Later on, we added the United States. So we were comparing the federal systems of those three countries. I taught a course in the Masters in Public Policy on health dynamics of health policy in Australia. I taught in the MBA, two-unit, Business Government Relations and Australian Political Institutions. Sometimes issues in politics and some other courses, depending on who was available in the department at the time. But my main areas were Australian politics and comparative federalism.
So putting your cap on the line at the moment, where do you see the future of Australian government? Are we going to stay tied to the King of England, or are we going to disengage ourselves from that and become our own nation?
Look, I think that question won't be answered for some time. I don't, given, you know, the referendum last year and the results there, I can't see that question of whether Australia becomes a republic coming to the fore anytime soon. But it is there, and I suspect that as our population is so multicultural these days, significant number of Australians now were born somewhere else. I think gradually we will cut the umbilical cord. Some people say that the monarch is from Britain. We don't have an Australian head of state. I see issues there, but I can't see it coming up in the foreseeable future.
Mm. I think it's been around a very long time,
it
that
has.
Issue.
It has.
And it will get addressed. We might have to get a few older generations behind us.
Yes.
And that's just life and what nature has in store for us all. But once we get, as you said, it's more multicultural, we get a younger population moving through into the older cohorts, I think it will become something.
One of the interesting things I did was I was one of the few academic advisors to the Constitutional Education Fund of Australia. Four of us were appointed, three from major metropolitan universities. I was the only one from a non-metropolitan uni. And we used to meet and advise schools and universities on political education. We had a Governor General's essay writing competition, usually got 700 or 800 entries from universities across Australia, and UNE did quite well.
It's no surprise then that you joined council. While you were here teaching politics, you joined council in 2004. That was the Armidale Jimmeric Council, the combined council. And you were voted deputy mayor in 2008. And then you went on to be the mayor of Armidale 2012-2013. So your involvement went from there to 2015-2016 when we went into administration. What was your time in council like?
Oh, it had its highs and its lows. It can be a challenging and frustrating role, but I loved serving the community. I've been heavily involved in community all my 45 years in Armidale. I fell in love with the place, as I said, and been involved in a lot of community groups, helping where I can, making hopefully a positive contribution. You know, as I said, it had its highs and lows. When I was mayor, Armidale won the New South Wales Keep Australia Beautiful competition. We went on to become second in Australia. We had two firsts and a second, like Victor Harbour, South Australia, but they had two firsts and a second, but they pipped us on the post. We came second across the country with 1,100 entries.
So one of the big pushes for you was the industrial land out at the airport. You were a big supporter of that?
Yes, I was mayor that put through the industrial land report, which extended the land south of the airport, across the road from the airport. Acacia Park was expanded, and the land behind the cattle yards up to the tennis courts was rezoned industrial as well.
So one of the things that you told me off air was Tony Windsor's book, Windsor's Way, in 2016 was the second edition. He made a comment about the then working with Armidale Council. What did he say?
Tony Windsor said that he had 10 councils in the New England electorate when he was the member. He said the best council he dealt with was Armidale Jimmeric under the leadership of Peter Duckett and Jim Maher. And he basically said this is part of the reason Armidale was the first centre on mainland Australia to get the NBN. We were the best council that he worked with. And we put politics aside and worked for our community.
However, the big frustration for me, being around a bit and watching council, was those voting blocks. This is prior to the administrator being appointed, was the voting blocks within council. Like, some good ideas were put forward by different people, but because it came from a different block than the other people, they didn't get up.
Yeah, there were some good projects that should have gone ahead. I was a big advocate of firstly the library, a new library for Armidale, and later that morphed into a civic precinct with a performing arts centre, and I saw that as being part of the answer to the central Armidale development.
Back then we had a central mall that was lifeless, still is lifeless, but council's doing a lot to try and turn that around at the moment. But back then the precinct plan, now you went... Tell me about the process of developing the precinct plan. You went and talked to stallholders?
Well, we talked to shopkeepers about the mall and the situation, and as deputy mayor I pushed for a meeting with the landholders, those who were renting, and so on, businesses in the mall, to address the issues and concerns about the rental costs, etc., what was holding them all back. There were mixed views on what rents, and some said it's about right, others said, well, you know, the landholders are looking after us in this hard time, and others said it's too dear. We got an expert in on CBD development, and she conducted a survey and reported back to us. We opened that up to the public, and you know, she had some great ideas.
So just where did we get to with the precinct? My understanding is there was going to be a performing arts centre in combination with the library. This was the proposal. There's in Cinders Lane, connected to the current council building.
Yep.
And then council was needed to put a application in for federal government or state government funding?
Federal regional development grant we were after.
For the library?
For the library to start at stage one. The survey work we'd done showed that the library was badly needed, a new library, that we had 18 architectural firms express interest, narrowed to six, narrowed to three. They went away and did drawings and costings and so on. And we ended up choosing the cheapest, about $7.2 million to do. The dearest was about $15 million. The DA was passed by council. It was passed by the Northern Regional Planning Panel, and that was again unanimous. And I put up a mayoral minute to chase government grants, and I lost.
So that again comes back to these voting blocks.
Yes, it did. That was a
voting. So the principal aim, though, of that Performing Arts Centre with the library in Cinders Lane was to actually breathe life back into the mall.
Oh, I would have done a tremendous job.
Tremendous. So if we had it now, even though it was $7 million, if we tried to do it now...
That's just the library.
That'd be double that. But anyway, regardless of the money, if we'd done that, we would have life in the mall now. Because, from my understanding, is that the performing arts people, the orchestra, the Armidale Orchestra, all the people basically could fill the calendar of events, 365 days a year, nights, days, whatever, with people coming to that performing arts centre. Bands, orchestral things. There's people coming from Brisbane down the New England Highway to Tamworth and further afield that would stop off and utilise that space. There'd be concerts on during the day and night. What about the school events that they have, the schools, extravaganzas? So the idea was to have it just build out 24/7, 365 days a year, and then all the coffee shops, all the entertainment flows then into the mall. It was a great idea, I think.
Yeah, well, the first point is the old library that used to be in Faulkner Street. The old library used to attract between 1,500 and 1,700 people a week to that old library. And what did they do after they'd been there? They'd go into the mall and shop. The administrator moved that library out of the CBD. So you're taking those people out and taking them a block or two down the road. Under the proposal that we had, firstly the library, and then a new library would have probably added another 50%, you know, of visitors to the library because it's new. Secondly, the Performing Arts Centre. We had that drawings done, costings and all the rest.
400-seater?
500 seats in the main theatre with a balcony. Perfect stage, purpose-built, but a smaller theatre for 120 people. So you could have had a small performance going on as well.
Mm. So what have we got now? What's available now? You've got the Taz Hoskins Centre?
Yeah, but you're not going to attract...
How many there?
There's 200. It'll only hold 200. You're never going to attract big shows unless you can, you know, put at least 400 or 500 people.
And if we don't have that...
We haven't got it. And I'll give you one good example. There was a chance to get the Australian Opera here. You've got to book these people well in advance to get them. But the Australian Opera were willing to come to Armidale. The fellow who was bringing them went out to Lazenby Hall, went out to the uni, but couldn't get it because the uni exams were on. They're not going to go to any other venue in Armidale. It's got to be something that's sizeable, you know. So there's one we lost, you know. We lost that show. Just last year, Jimmy Barnes was here. He attracted 10,000 people out to Peterson's Winery. My vision was to have Jimmy Barnes play there, but also you could have had the Australian Opera, you could have had the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, da-da-da. We miss out on 49 shows at this time that were travelling up and down the north coast of New South Wales but weren't coming inland because there was no venue for them. Tamworth, with its Capital Theatre and its entertainment centre and so on, gets 19 major productions a year. on average. We get very little, you know, because we haven't got a proper venue.
We haven't got the venue. And I hate to use the term make it and they will come. However, this is the perfect example. If you actually have the venue that's 400 or 500 seater, people will come and use it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we lost out on the rug was pulled a little bit from under us with the amalgamation of the school, the Armidale and Javel High School, in that we supposedly, though, at the time, the same discussions were being had, supposedly we were going to get a performing arts centre there, but as we now know, it's basically
general purpose hall.
You know. It's general purpose for the school.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's the same with uni, with Lazenby.
Mm.
It's a university facility first and foremost. The other point I'd make is that had we gone ahead with this project, the whole block could have become a conference centre, and you could have had the performing arts centre as a major venue, supported by about 11 meeting rooms in the library, small group discussions and so on, plus meeting rooms that might have been available in the council administration building, and then the town hall, of course. So it was possible to have a conference for at least minimum 1,200 people right there in the mall. And what are people going to do, participants at a conference? They're going to, when they have a break, they're going to walk into the mall because it's only a couple of minutes away, you know, and spend their money. And it just made a lot of sense to me, and you made the point, and it's true, that Performing Arts Centre was within walking distance of just about every motel in Armidale, every pub and every restaurant and cafe.
Look, there was I watched with great enthusiasm, and I was involved in the precinct putting my 2 cents forward. But unfortunately, we continue to fly with a broken wing. With a library, it's in a distant galaxy so far away. But that's decisions that were made. So, unfortunately, hopefully, well, the council now seem to be working very well, and I give them credit for what they're doing, trying to bring community together and all their events, particularly some of those rolling events, those music events they've had recently over summer. They've been very great. But I just want to go back. Now, while you were with council, you're with Rotary, and you did something in Thailand. Tell me about that.
Yes, I went to Thailand, family connections, and I went to a small rural village called Kortaloo in Chumbon province, and I had a phone call, would I come down and teach some English at the local primary school? So my then wife and I went down and taught some English, basic conversational English and so on, and one of the teachers said, Jim, would you like to come for a drive to school? He took me up to some of the most disadvantaged areas of the village, up into the mountains and so on, and I saw real poverty, you know. I came back to the school and the principal was there, and it had torn my heartstrings out just about, and I said to the principal, I'd like to do something for your school, what do you need? And he said, we need new computers and we need help with playground equipment, we need help with a food plan because we feed the kids at lunchtime, we need a new library, and I knew they needed a new library, it was appalling. And I just said, blurted it out, I said, I'll get you a new library. And then I thought, what did you just say? So I thought, no. Next day, the teacher who'd taken me for the drive told me the principal had had a staff meeting, told them that I said, I'll get him a new library. But then he said, he's a well-meaning man, means well. We've all heard this before. It might be the last time we've seen him. And when that came back to me, I thought, well, you just don't know me.
So that was, you did that through Rotary?
Yeah, you did that through the Rotary Club of Armidale.
Peter Duckett?
Peter Duckett launched the campaign in the Armidale Council Chambers, and it took us 3 years from the launch to the official opening of the Library Lifelong Learning Centre, built in the grounds of the school. One third of the building was for adult education, two thirds for the kids. We stocked it with all new furniture, new computers, put them online. They weren't online. Kids had no access to computers, and now we had them online. And we were able to take the teachers up to Chumbon City and buy, I think the first time was 40,000 baht worth of books, and then we did another trip over later and bought another 40,000 baht of books, letting the teachers choose what was needed. You know, it works beautifully. And I must say, with Australia Day coming up, one of the beautiful things that came out of it was that each year, on Australia Day, the school had an assembly and played the Australian anthem.
So that was 2007 to 2010, and it's still in operation
today. It's still in operation, yes, and it's working very well.
Yep. Great. Well, that's a success story, which doesn't surprise me. You retired after you went into administration and you've been working with St Vincent de Paul.
Yes, I'm a member of the St Joseph's Conference and we visit a lot of people in their homes, in nursing homes. Some of these people are sick, you know, some are just elderly or lonely. And I put an appeal out. If anybody's got a neighbour who's sick or elderly or what, keep an eye on them and visit them. And we help people in domestic violence situations. We help people who can't afford to move their furniture. We've helped with that and done it ourselves. Yesterday I visited an old gentleman whose granddaughter had died recently and another person who we helped move late last year. That particular person had gone through a pretty hard time down on the coast with, firstly, bushfire burning the house, and then secondly repaired the house and everything, and then the floods came through and moved to higher ground here at Armidale, the highest city in Australia.
They're not likely to get flooded up here.
No, if we go under, the rest of the country goes under. But, you know, it's a great privilege to be able to help these people, and you make friendships along the way and you see, you know, what, you know, keep your feet on the ground and you learn to appreciate people and what you can do for them. And I always had that as a goal in council. We talk about the big projects and how well we did financially or whatever, but there's a hell of a lot of people that we help on an individual basis with their, you know, just their problems with DAs or, you know, some issue with a barking dog or, you know.
So you also retired to look after your youngest children, Ryan and...
Navita. She's the only Navita in Armidale.
So whereabouts are they? Well, I think one's finished school now.
Ryan's just finished school at Armidale Secondary College. He's going to have a gap year before he decides to go to Macquarie Uni to do a Bachelor of Business. And Navita's going into Year 11 at PLC. She's very involved in the life of that school, doing very well. The last I heard, she was interested in doing law, possibly at Macquarie again.
So, and you've got Simon. Simon's a bit older, but he's a bit of a fisherman and a teacher down in Foster.
Yes, he is. He was a baby when we came across here in January 1980. He was only 6 or 7 months old. And he grew up in Armidale and participated in the life of his schools and also mad keen sportsman, heavily involved in all that, the bird club. Now he's a national judge at Finch shows and so on. Loves his fishing, and he's got a 4-year-old son, my grandson Billy, who is pulling in sharks and beautiful big flathead at 4 years of age.
Well, I've seen plenty of photos of the big lizards that come out of that. Is it Wallace Lake?
Wallace Lake. Yeah, it's a beautiful spot and plenty of good fishing.
Yes, no, I've seen plenty of photos. You catching quite a few, the big dog catching big lizards.
Yes.
So I think we might finish it off there, Jim. Thanks very much for coming in. Any parting comments about Armidale?
Armidale has a wealth of potential and it's a beautiful place to live. What I've noticed in recent times is the number of people who have moved here post-COVID, wanting to get out of Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, have moved here. A lot of younger people bringing their families. I've met quite a few in recent years who have settled in Armidale and just love the lifestyle. And because we've got an ageing population, I've seen the facilities and the number of aged care facilities improve and increase dramatically. And that's a, you know, retirement. I was talking to a fellow who just moved to Armidale last Friday with the furniture and everything and came here for the climate, you know. He came to Armidale for the climate. Came from Queensland, hot and humid. And people are seeking that now as the temperatures keep soaring. So we've got a lot. And I think I'd just urge people to get in behind the councils and the civic leaders and so on and make things happen. You know, we often look down the road at Tamworth and people have various views. But what I've noticed over the years, if somebody floats a good idea, the community get in behind it down there. And I'd urge people here to do likewise. We need to ensure that Armidale thrives, prospers, that there's job opportunities for people, but we also need to look after our quality of life.
So I think just to finish off, certainly we've got Australia Day at Central Park this Sunday, 10:30 till 12:30. One of our local presenters, Sandy Sweeney, has been nominated for an Australia Day Award, so we'll be all going down there to support Sandy. you say about retirement, I'm always on this mantra, and I heard it through one of the developers here, that people he was selling these apartments to, these retirement apartments, were ex-UNE students, big proportion of ex-UNE students, because they'd come here, now they'd come back to Armidale because they knew Armidale was a safe place, a good place to retire, because they enjoyed their time in Armidale. Maybe they met their partner here, had a life together, and just and came back to the nest, to the home nest. So I think there is a
bit... I think that's true. I think, you know, ex-students from UNE, some of them have come here for the reasons you give, but also some people who grew up here and have gone out into the big wide world and made their careers and so on are now returning here because it's an excellent place to bring up a family. We've got excellent schools. You can go from preschool to PhD in Armidale, and everywhere's 10 minutes away, which I love. And so parking's not a huge problem at
so
all.
So we've got a huge alumni, going back to the UNE, we've got a huge alumni of people that are that obviously are moving through that early life, marriage, children, and want to come back, so that's fine, we can target them. We've also got the older people moving through their 60s, 65s, 70s, 55s, whatever, coming back to retire. Working with that alumni, we've almost got a known list of people that we could actually be inviting back.
Yes, UNE, the prospects at UNE are very important for Armidale. Town and gown relations could be better, but we should be using the alumni and working with UNE, and we tried it in my time. We used to meet, we set up a town and gown committee. I don't think it worked well enough. It was a meeting once or twice a year. We had a meal together and nice social get-together, but there's a lot of good things that can happen. If we work together, can achieve so much more.
I think now that we've got UNE going very much online across the world, and that's probably where, unfortunately, things are going these days, we've got to look at those opportunities and grab them and see how we can work with UNE. So I might finish it off now, Jim. Thanks very much for being our community spotlight this week. You're one of our gems in our community, and I wish you all the best with all the work you're doing with St Vincent de Paul and Navita, Ryan and Simon, and I look forward to some more fishing pictures of the big lizards out of Wallace Lake.
I do too. Thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you today, and I'll be around for a lot longer. I love the place.
All right, that's Community Spotlight. Thank you, Jim.
It or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.